Hey, it's Luke Black, proud owner of The Marketplace. Since 1980, we've been your neighborhood sandwich shop. We're open Monday through Saturday for breakfast and lunch. And now, open for dinner, Monday through Thursday, 4 to 8. If you're craving a fresh sandwich, salad, soup, or a hot cup of local roasted coffee, we've got it all made fresh daily. The Marketplace can cater your next event, from small office lunches to full wedding parties. You can rent our space for private gatherings after hours. You can find The Marketplace at 246 Olmsted Boulevard in Pinehurst. It's not just a sandwich, it's an experience.
This is Taking Aim, a weekly show hosted by David Hensley and Stephen Woodward. Join us for open season on hypocrisy, deception, woke culture, and uniparty cronies. We'll review the stories you might have missed and prepare you for what's to come in the week ahead. Taking Aim starts right now.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to your favorite Saturday morning program, heard exclusively here on WEEB. This is Taking Aim, and I am Steve Woodward. It is, of course, Masters weekend, and later today we'll be watching the exciting third round from Augusta National. I have to say, unequivocally, my favorite sports weekend of the year, bar none. I love everything about the Masters. I have had the privilege of attending for short periods of time over the years, including several years ago, and there's nothing like it. And of course, there's no better stage on earth to watch the best golfers in the world under the most enormous pressure, chasing after one of the most coveted prizes. So before we get to that, though, we've got a few other topics to talk to on this radio program. I want to begin, as I always do, by acknowledging our beloved sponsor, The Marketplace Restaurant and Catering, since 1980, where we all go for fabulous breakfast and lunch options. And now, of course, Monday through Thursday, dinner is served at The Marketplace between the hours of 4 and 8 p.m., and I think you'll want to get over there and check out some of the new menu items that will be forthcoming. But The Marketplace is also your catering go-to for the small, intimate office meeting, or, in fact, the wedding of the century, and something in between. Maybe a big Masters party could be on the horizon. You never know. Marketplace, we thank you for your sponsorship of this program, as always. A reminder that coming up, we will have a conversation with Tom Jones, who is the president of the American Accountability Foundation, which is a nonprofit oversight and research organization that, you know, a lot of what they do is under the radar, behind the scenes. You're not going to see the name of that organization popping up a lot in media reports, but they are experts in investigation and opposition research targeting the left. And it's typically well-funded candidates, and all of their subversive and Marxist agendas. And Tom Jones will be joining us later in this program. He will also be coming to Moore County on April the 16th, which is this coming Thursday. He will be addressing the Moore County Republican Men's Club. If you would like to learn more about his visit and possibly how to register to attend, go to mcrmc.org and you will learn everything you need to know about both the men's club and the upcoming speaking engagement. I'm sorry, it's mcrmc.club. mcrmc.club. That's Tom Jones from the American Accountability Foundation, coming next week and joining us later in this very program with his insights, which you will not want to miss. Public enemy number one, ladies and gentlemen, always kicks off our program. And this week, public enemy number one is more of an entity than it is a person, although we will hear from some people relevant to that. We are seeing, I think, and earning the title is the organization, well, not the organization, the the company, the developer of artificial intelligence models, Anthropic, they tossed out a bit of a curveball on our culture this week by announcing that they had, in fact, released a new AI model called Mythos, Claude Mythos, to be precise. The first AI model that officials believe, according to media reports, is capable of bringing down, for instance, a Fortune 100 company, or crippling swaths of the internet, or penetrating vital national defense systems, according to Axios.com. They say that we are entering the scary phase of AI, a model deemed so powerful that its full release into the wild could unleash untold catastrophe. Because of that, only carefully vetted companies and organizations, about 40 of them so far, will have access to Claude Mythos. Now, you're probably saying to yourself, well, why in the world would they unleash such a potentially dangerous version of artificial intelligence? And by the way, does this not, in fact, remind us why we've been warned that for all of the upsides that AI can bring to our everyday life, to the medical community, to data processing and many other tedious tasks, that there are potentially many dangerous downsides to it? And I believe that we're beginning to learn that is in fact the case based on this Anthropic cautionary tale. The New York Post reports that the Anthropic CEO, Dario Amodei, has unveiled something called Project Glass Wing, which is sort of an ominous sounding thing, which is a plan to provide the model only to a handpicked group of about 40 companies, including Amazon, Google, Apple, NVIDIA, and others, which will receive early access so they can use it to find and fix security flaws. But it does have the potential to, you know, do some serious damage if unleashed. And you're probably wondering, well, if not this one, let's say they contain this particular version of AI and make it so that it's not a existential threat to the world. But what about the next one or the one after that? Where does it end? But the interesting thing about all of this is that not all of the tech bros and the tech geeks out there in the blogosphere and the podcast sphere are buying into this. They actually believe that Anthropic is engaging in something of a PR campaign. Let's hear from one of these guys on YouTube who runs a YouTube channel that is called AI for Non-Techies. His name is Brock. Let's play clip one.
Anthropic just built an AI that is so powerful, they won't let anyone use it. It's called Claude Mythos, and it's another level above their smartest model. Here's why they're keeping it locked. In just a few weeks, it found thousands of hidden security problems inside of software. But get this, these are problems that the best experts missed for years. One bug had been hiding for 27 years. Nobody caught it, but Mythos found it. So instead of releasing it, they created something called Project Glasswing. Only 40 companies in the world get access. Companies like Apple, Google, Microsoft, Amazon, they're using it to protect their software that billions of people use every single day. Anthropic literally said that this model is too dangerous to release. And honestly, it's starting to feel like we're living in a sci-fi movie.
Right. So exactly. If it's really this bad, is it science fiction that they're trying to inject into this to sort of prop up Anthropic's dominance in this space, the AI space, or is it in fact the very dangerous new model that should all have us all, you know, wanting to go join the Artemis crew up circling the moon? I don't know, but Theo on YouTube, a self described AI nerd, brought this back into perspective. Let's play clip two.
Things are about to change a lot. Things are going to change faster than they have, and they've already been changing really fast. This is the moment we need to start paying attention. This is the moment where we need to have the conversations with our parents about what it looks like to get a fake message or call from somebody that looks and sounds just like you but isn't. This is when we need to call our grandparents and make sure they're on the latest iOS and using the latest version of Chrome on their computers. This is when we have to start warning the people in our lives about what AI can do to the things we rely on every day. The world isn't ready for every program we use, every website we go to, every operating system we rely on to be exploitable in this way. And it's going to get way worse before it gets better. Sorry to raise alarm bells about a model we can't even use, but want to make sure the severity of this is known.
So to his point, you and I and businesses around us may never actually come into contact with this dangerous Claude Mythos AI model. But the point is that will other companies other than Anthropic be as cautious, be as careful in the future? And that is the real story here, not so much that this one particular model is going to, bring the world to a crashing halt. But very interesting times. And, this kind of stuff, the AI threat to the future of our civilization, it sounds like, okay, are you really going to go along with this, this wrist-wringing and this hysteria? I don't want to overstate it, but I think we have to monitor it and be vigilant about it without a doubt going forward. So those are the public enemy numbers, public enemies number one, if not in the immediate present, certainly potentially in the future. Then, of course, it is always fun, isn't it, to segue to public embarrassment number one as part of our big Taking Aim program each and every week. And boy, oh boy, boy, howdy, did we come across a couple that are not only embarrassing, but infuriating and sort of, a reminder of how not only pathetic the left is, but how evil and how hateful, how disdainful toward our country they are. But the top public embarrasser is actually a Canadian. And normally we don't go north of the border on this show, but this is so absurd that I felt the need to share it with you. It involves a woman who is a Canadian member of parliament, a far lefty, and she is part of the New Democrat Party in Canada. Her name is Leah Gazan. So she is at this conference attended by these various organizations that represent the indigenous population of Canada, which is, quite substantial. It's a large country, and it does have a multifaceted indigenous population. But as you might imagine, this is an organization, a conference that is largely taking place to do a lot of warnings about how people are being neglected and potentially endangered, and their lives and their health care and all these things are being neglected by big government. They have that in Canada too. In fact, Canada's is a very far left, borderline democratic government, small D democratic. But we go to this conference and we find that this member of parliament, Leah Gazan, is very upset about funding cuts imposed by the Canadian government. Let's play clip three.
When the budget was released, I was shocked to find out that Prime Minister Carney is cutting $7 billion between Indigenous Services Canada and Crown Indigenous Relations. They provided $0 to deal with the ongoing genocide of MMIW G2SLGBTQQIA+. This is abhorrent. This is callous. This is callous because the very Liberal government that has stripped organizations of life-sustaining funding has now promised, committed $13 billion, $13 billion on military spending. Who is paying for it? Indigenous women across this country, Indigenous women, girls to us, LGBTQIA+, are not safe. In fact, rates of violence are increasing. And what is the Prime Minister doing? He is turning a blind eye on this violence.
Okay, so this Canadian lefty has taken the alphabet soup of the aggrieved communities of people to a whole new level, to an almost Morse code level, where I don't know how she spits it out with such clarity. I have to give her credit, just her delivery of this this long alphabet soup title was pretty remarkable. Somebody commented on social media that she had done nothing more than create a very strong password. So you might want to go back and listen to it again, and maybe that would be your new bulletproof password for your various electronic devices. I don't know. She may have provided a public service without even realizing it. But yeah, by golly, lots of fear and loathing up there in the Indigenous community, beginning with MMW and ending with plus something or other. Good stuff out of from our Canadian neighbors. The largest national park, that's Canada, our largest national park. A loft apartment over a really great party, someone once said of Canada as well. Now, there is a runner-up, as always, for public embarrassment number one, because actually there's usually like multiple dozens of them because there are many, many crazies running around. This one is a little bit more disturbing, I would say, than entertaining, than a cheap laugh line. But, you know, since the military engagement by the United States in Iran on February 28, which has been largely successful in wiping out not only their leadership and their military leadership as well, but also weaponry and weapon manufacturing and just a lot of the infrastructure that allows them to be the number one sponsor of terror around the world, an ongoing initiative from which I believe the United States should not bail out too quickly, but should also do everything in its power to bring to an end with a victorious conclusion and the neutering of Iran once and for all after its 47 years as a nuclear threat to the world. But in Michigan, you sort of wonder, what are these people like who line up for these No Kings rallies on the sidewalks, and you drive by and you hope your car doesn't go off the road because you're distracted by these crazy people who are just loony and who poorly dressed and in need of a bottle of shampoo and perhaps an iron for their attire that they're wearing. We found one in Michigan. The social media world found one. She is a despicable humanoid, and I should say her name, but she's been following the activities in Iran and happened to notice that one of our fighter jets went down and a couple of these pilots had to eject, and of course the first one was rescued very quickly, the second one within a couple of days, so they're out of the woods now. But this woman in Michigan was thrilled by the prospect of the fate of one of these fighter pilots. Play clip four.
When you're at war with somebody, guess what that other country does? Exactly what they've been doing through history all this time, right? You take them hostage and you use them for leverage. So guess what Iran did? They put a bounty out on his head, and whoever finds him gets a great award. I can't wait. Hopefully it's like money or jewels. I hope the person who finds him is very poor and ends up being very wealthy. And I hope Iran holds their promise.
So there you have it. Did you hear how giddy she was about that? Now, you're talking about her utter disdain for a uniformed member of the United States military, a brave and capable jet fighter pilot who is carrying out a very important mission, and yet she was giddy. Well, she's been revealed on social media, on Twitter, also known as X. The phone number of the business where she works has been sent out over the airwaves and all over social media. Her name, everything else under the sun. I did some further research to see if she has had a knock on her door from any law enforcement, or if any of the members of her community who are not insane have taken any action to draw attention to the things that she said. And apparently, as of the moment, she's getting away with it. So I hate to be the one to report that to you. Hey, a big story burst out right toward the end of the week. It was kind of a bombshell, I guess you might say. And I bring it up because it involves a best-selling book that came out, I believe, late last year. And the author of the book actually was a guest on this program one fine day. His name is Seth Harp, and he published a New York Times bestseller called The Fort Bragg Cartel, subtitle Drug Trafficking and Murder in the Special Forces. And, a very thoroughly reported book, a subject matter that is not exactly light reading, because it really opened our eyes to some of the dysfunction passing through the North Carolina corridor, all roads leading to Fort Bragg, the largest military base in the world. Here's what the story is, though, and this is what we need to focus on. The FBI apparently read the book, and this week announced the arrest of a former Fort Bragg civilian contractor for allegedly providing top secret details about Delta Force Special Forces units to the journalist Seth Harp, who later published the information in an article and his book. Courtney Williams, 40, of Wagram, North Carolina, was indicted by a federal grand jury and charged with violating the Espionage Act in connection to the alleged transmission of classified national defense information to the journalist in violation of federal law. Wow. Officials say Williams worked for a special military unit between 2010 and 2016, supporting top-level military warfighters. During that time, she held a top-secret, sensitive, compartmented information security clearance, according to prosecutors. She had daily access to a wide range of classified information. But as a clearance holder of that level, she was trained to know about proper handling, safeguarding, and storage of classified information. The investigators allege, and this is really serious, that Williams repeatedly communicated with a journalist by phone and through text messages between 2022 and 25. The two had over 10 hours of phone calls and exchanged more than 180 messages to the prosecutors. She knew she was talking to a journalist, the FBI said. And in this particular case, I think, First Amendment being what it is, such an important pillar of our freedom in this country, a reporter, is not really responsible for reminding a person with a high security clearance that they probably shouldn't be telling him things. In fact, the reporter had a mission to tell the truth about what was going on under the scenes in a book that he calls The Fort Bragg Cartel, with a subtitle that has the phrase drug trafficking in it. I think he was writing the book for a very valid reason, and many people who read it came away with newly enlightened understanding of what's going on beneath the surface, sadly, in our military ranks. Not only the trafficking of drugs, but the addiction, the terrible addiction, and the consequences of that, both for the addicted and their loved ones and friends and family members. So anyway, that's a big story I wanted to share with you. Okay, we touched on briefly the military engagement in Iran, and one of the things that it has brought to light, of course, is how fragile the passageway known as the Strait of Hormuz is in the Persian Gulf, and also just how fragile the world of energy and its distribution is, and how vulnerable it can be to disruption. In this particular case, it has so far had more of an impact on the price of energy, as anybody who puts gas in a car will tell you, than it has on shortages of energy. But this has prompted some reporting and on the impact on the global economy of the ongoing standoff with Iran. Let's hope that's going to be resolved very shortly. But the International Energy Agency, which is kind of like the World Health Organization, think of that as the same as what the WHO is to COVID and pandemics. The International Energy Agency is to the free consumption of energy around the world. They have apparently come up with a new report called Sheltering from Oil Shocks, 23 pages, which proposes measures that definitely, shall we say, seem to be a COVID lockdown kind of narrative, including the following familiar suggestions in the event of a major energy shock in the world: working from home where possible, which would be projected to cut automobile oil consumption by 2 to 6% by just telling people to stay home. That sounds familiar, doesn't it? Reduce speed limits on highways. Oh, that's always convenient. Encourage public transport use, which also would reduce national oil use by 1 to 3%. And then, of course, everybody's favorite, carpooling. Who doesn't love riding around with a bunch of people that you barely know? And that, of course, applies to our everyday life. Then, of course, in terms of how we transport ourselves by air, the report recommends avoiding air travel if an alternative option exists. So that's certainly great for the airline industry. Switch to other modern cooking solutions away from gas and toward electric. You know, the Democrats would love to get rid of all gas stoves in our homes. The writer here, the reporter, says, finally, if this sounds similar to what we experienced during COVID, you would be right. The IEA takes no shame in drawing upon lessons learnt during COVID, and you would be right in being fully turned off by the concept of another crisis and lockdown, but I don't believe governments would have a choice here. So that's something to think about. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we are wrapping up another riveting program. Coming up, we have Tom Jones joining us from the American Accountability Foundation, and he'll be talking about what his organization does and his upcoming visit here to Moore County. Good morning, Tom.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Steve.
You're most welcome. Tom will be coming to Moore County next week on the 16th, that's a Thursday, to address the Moore County Republican Men's Club. If you are interested in hearing from him, you can go to the Moore County Republican Men's Club website to learn about how to sign up for the luncheon, which will kick off at high noon at Pinehurst number 9, right here, right here in Moore County. Tom founded the American Accountability Foundation back in March of 2021. That time period may cause a light bulb to go off, because that was a very pivotal moment when the election had wrapped up, and there were many questions about how Donald Trump was defeated after appearing to hold a comfortable lead in November of 2020 before we all went to bed. And the next morning, Joe Biden was somehow president of the United States. So it's March of 2021, Tom. And what was the motivation to ramp up the American Accountability Foundation at that point in time?
Yeah, so, you know, unfortunately, there was a change in administration, and AAF looked around, and what we saw in the conservative movement was, you know, a lot of folks who wrote white papers and did, you know, kind of interesting research, in a sense, from, like, you know, the kind of the research papers you'd write if you were at a think tank. But there was really no one within the conservative movement that did research with an eye towards disrupting people in the political space like we do in campaigns. We had unfortunately seen this during the first Trump administration, is there was a ton of left-wing groups that would do extensive research on all of our nominees, and the senators would have these, you know, thick books of opposition research on Trump's nominees from the first administration, and these guys would run into a buzzsaw. And, you know, kind of professionally, I was like, well, you know, you kind of got to respect the game. We looked at these guys and like, wow, they're doing their job well. Who does this on our side? And unfortunately, the answer was really nobody. So what we did when we stood up AAF in 2021 was we created an organization to provide that skill set to the conservative movement. So, you know, we created a group that cared about the individual who was, you know, a sub-cabinet level nominee, the director of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, the commissioner of the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency. Very important positions, hugely impactful for U.S. policy, but nobody really cares about them. So we created a skill set that was able to help our friends on Capitol Hill defeat bad nominees. And that was through really deep probing, actionable research on individuals that President Biden had nominated. So we wanted really, again, the conservative movement and our allies to have those skills to win the fight, and really to do what the left had done to us during 4 years of the first Trump administration. So that was kind of why, you know, March 2021, we turned the lights on and we start running, you know, doing research on the Assistant Attorney General for Civil Rights, the Office of Comptroller of Currency, a whole bunch of different folks that President Biden had nominated early in his administration.
And I guess now that we've moved into the Trump 2.0 phase, there's still a D.C. swamp to keep a very close eye on, and I imagine that is on your radar at all times.
It is, and it's not only the D.C. swamp. So, you know, there are 50 swamps all over the country in state capitals filled with really terrible people. So, you know, look, we were, you know, kind of 2023 timeframe, we were seeing the nominees, the tempo of nominees coming through really start to slow down. And AAF said, look, we have a really powerful skill set here. We've proved our value as opposition researchers for the movement. Where else do we need to help? Because, you know, kind of the nominees were slowing down. And that really is state capitals. That is groups in kind of the organized left, you know, whether it's groups like George Soros's Open Societies or Arnold Ventures or things like looking into universities for the people that lead and staff universities, which are almost universally liberal. So we've, again, brought that people-focused research capability and agenda to the different places where we need it, the different swamps around the country, whether they're a state capital, a university administrator's office, or, you know, kind of the leadership offices in a left-wing political group. But, yeah, there's... Look, I am supremely confident that I'm not going to run out of work for terrible lefties to research anytime soon.
Yes, well, that's an unfortunate but accurate statement, I'm sure. Well, you know, and we have that going on in North Carolina all the time, where we have a Republican-controlled legislature, But we have now yet another Democrat governor, another lieutenant governor Democrat, an attorney general Democrat. And plus, we're surrounded by these so-called prestigious universities, UNC, Chapel Hill, Duke, Wake Forest, on and on we can go on that list. And they're all largely, you know, inundated with soldiers of the left. So to your point, that is a perpetual problem. And you know, it seems to be in this state getting worse all the time because people are moving here from all these blue states and bringing with them their ideologies.
Exactly. And, you know, look, I'm a firm believer that bad things happen because of bad people. And, you know, it's really incumbent, you know, whether it's, you know, your lawmakers in the General Assembly, your executive branch, you really need to be paying attention to the people that you're putting into leadership positions. This is one of my biggest bugaboos. You know, we're talking about universities a little bit, is the university systems, even when we have, you know, Republican governors in places, the university systems end up being led by boards of kind of, you know, establishment rhino types when we have Republican and just terrible liberals when we don't, who don't really care about the what's going on in the university. Really, all they want is a good seat for the football games on Saturday. And what ends up happening is you get these people who just don't care about what's going on in the institutions, and they let kind of, you know, whether it's DEI or radical trans agenda or whatever it is at the universities this week, they let it go by without scrutiny or action. And the way you fix that is you pay attention to the type of people you put into these leadership positions. And, you know, these people have histories. They need to be researched. They need to understand who they are. Are they going to be a fighter? Are they strong conservatives? Are they willing to take on the status quo? You can learn these things in advance of nominating these people, but you have to have the will to do it. I think we'd get a lot better government if we paid a little bit more attention to the people we put into the system at the beginning of the process, as opposed to kind of trying to fix it once we end up with bad people in there. So I'm optimistic that we can do that. The skills exist. There's, you know, groups like myself can help with vetting these people, but, you know, look, if our criteria for putting somebody on a university board or whatever board it is who gave me the most money, we're going to continue to have our university systems led by a bunch of left-wing losers, whether they're Republicans or Democrats. And that's a shame.
So, Tom, not only do we see that at the higher education level, but the same problem exists, as we've learned, at the grassroots with our public education school boards, where it's become very apparent that the agenda is in play right here in our own communities all the time.
100%. And that's really where having a capability to research individuals becomes particularly powerful. You know, some races, you know, national and statewide races, you know, sometimes the information is not going to move the needle because maybe people are already familiar with it or the candidates are already characterized. But at these local levels where a lot of the leaders are new to their community, you have a really unique opportunity to really kind of frame and characterize people and leave indelible impressions with voters that are incredibly difficult for them to change. So, yeah, if you want to win these local races, that's where kind of opposition research is really powerful, because these people are unknown and you have the ability to get in there and make a difference. And most, you know, maybe most importantly, is many of these individuals don't know how to react to negative information. So when you put it out there, you have kind of a free space to work in, and oftentimes they react poorly to it and make problems even worse. So, you know, things like school boards and local county councils and things like that are incredibly impactful on the day-to-day life of people around the country, whether North Carolina, where it's Kentucky, where I live, or, you know, any community. So if you can win those races, change the people that are in leadership there, that has a huge impact on our communities. And really, particularly since it's where kind of new people come into the political environment, if you can get in there and frame them early, hugely impactful, hugely game-changing, and really gets us good, you know, like in primaries, really gets us good conservatives instead of kind of wishy-washy establishment guys.
As a reminder, we're talking to Tom Jones, who is the president of the American Accountability Foundation, which is a nonprofit government oversight and research organization doing the work in the trenches to expose the left at all different levels of government and beyond. Tom, one of the areas in which your organization did a lot of heavy lifting during the Biden regime was in the area of illegal immigration and the policies that were allowing our country to be invaded by the millions. You created a DHS watch list. I assume you're happy with how this has dramatically changed since March of 21, when you all founded your organization.
Yeah, it really has. And so DHS watch list was really an initiative by us to focus on the people in the process. And we did something there that really hadn't been done before, and that was focusing on the unelected civil servants, you know, deep state, administrative state, call them whatever you want, but the people who are in senior leadership positions within agencies, they're like, do the day-to-day work implementing immigration policy. And really, and what we did there was we put together background dossiers on about 125 different people who were senior career civil servants in the immigration space before Trump was elected, and said, look, if you want an immigration policy that's focused on border enforcement and deportation, here's the list of people who will not help you and, in fact, will work to obstruct your agenda. If you want your agenda to be effective, you need to get these people out of the government. Send them to Bear, Alaska. I don't care, but just you can't have these type of people in the Department of Homeland Security, the Department of Justice. And by and large, the administration did that. And I think that was an important part of what made really this kind of first, you know, year and a half run of immigration policy so successful, is they didn't have the people within the administration, you know, kind of throwing up roadblocks along the way, slow rolling initiatives, obstructing good policy. So, you know, that was really important for us. We said the people that make policy need to be exposed to the American people. We did the same thing in the DEI space. We put together a DEI watch list where we focused on the men and women who were implementing DEI policy at the healthcare agencies. These folks had never had any scrutiny. They had essentially carte blanche to implement really divisive and racist agendas within the agencies during the Biden administration. And we really kind of put together a path for the Trump administration to say, hey, here's some of the people you need to clean out early to make sure that when you pull DEI out by its roots, you don't have people in the agency finding ways to put it back in. So again, it's all about people, and that's what we remain focused on, and really have been incredibly pleased with what we've gotten from the Trump administration.
So now here we are, 2026, about to enter a very contentious midterm election cycle. I'm growing very weary of reading over and over again how the midterms are not looking good for the Republicans, how historically they're likely to lose many seats, particularly in the U.S. House of Representatives, and how it's going to be the beginning of the end for Trump 2.0. From where you observe this and knowing what your organization is capable of, how do you view the midterms coming up, and what is your what will the role be of the Accountability Foundation?
So, you know, I kind of talk about two things here. One, AAF is a 501c3, so we won't be, you know, involved in a substantive way in any races. But I think, you know, just as someone who spent their career in opposition research, I think it's going to play an incredibly important role, because at the end of the day, like, a lot of people think opposition research is about, you know, digging up some dirty secret that people were trying to hide. There is some of that. But really what it's about is telling a story about candidates so that the voters are better educated about who they're really voting for. And I think that's going to be incredibly impactful in races all across the country, particularly in North Carolina. where there's a deep well to mine to show how the candidates, liberal candidates, are really out of step with traditional American values and with the values of the voters who they're asking for their vote. So, I mean, look, I think the former governor's got a long history down there of just terrible things that he's done. It's going to be a matter of finding what resonates the most with the voters so that you can go and educate them and really make it clear, hey, this is the choice that's on the ballot. You know, at a certain point, I've seen it's not so much a battle of war chests. I mean, you need a certain amount to win, but you know, if Jeb Bush taught us anything, it's that, you know, unlimited money doesn't win races.
Yeah.
At a certain point, it gets saturated, and I think if you can use research to come up with a more compelling message about your opponent, contrast it to your candidate, you can really make whatever war chest you have, as long as it's sufficient, get you across the finish line to a win. So I think that's going to be what a lot of candidates are going to have to do. And I think there's a lot of good stories to tell about a lot of the opponents in the races this year. If you just spend the time to look, probing, and then come up with really compelling messages that resonate with voters, whether it's voters at large or very tailored way to, you know, specific individual voters who may have some issue that is the thing that flips their vote. But when you can find out what that is, press that button for them. It can be hugely impactful in races.
Well, you referenced the U.S. Senate race, which will have former Governor Democrat Roy Cooper against a Republican Michael Whatley, who is a novice candidate but has been in the political spotlight as chairman of both the state and national Republican parties, and is, you know, endorsed by Donald Trump. But it is, you know, Cooper is a career politician. Prior to being governor for two terms, he was attorney general in North Carolina. He is expected to have a huge war chest and will have vast resources at his disposal compared to what Whatley is likely to have coming in, although it will also be substantial on his side. But again, it looks like this is going to be one of those races where Whatley needs to tell the story of Roy Cooper's career of empty promises and terrible outcomes.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So, and look, I mean, there's got to be two parts to this. And, hopefully this is interesting to your listeners, but I'm going to get down into the weeds a little bit. You know, every professional campaign that's run, you know, particularly at the statewide level and obviously nationally, you know, part of what you need to do is research on the other guy so you can tell the story about him. But you also need to do the research on yourself so you know how you respond to the story that your opponent's going to tell. So, you know, Whatley, I think, you know, as a new candidate, you know, who hasn't been aggressively vetted in the public light in the way you would for a senatorial seat, you know, I'm hoping his team, and I'm confident they are, because the Trump political operation is top notch, but they're going to have done an aggressive vetting of him and answered any questions about, you know, anything he said and things like that, so that they're ready and can be prepared when the attacks come. You know, that, like, the thing I try to tell candidates when I work with them is, you know, you want to do a research book on yourself so that when you have to answer the question, you already know what the answer is. You don't get a reporter sticking a microphone in your face at an event asking you something that you never thought you'd have to answer, and you mumble and you sound dumb and you make the problem worse. I'm confident that they've done that. And then they can, you know, be prepared to really kind of focus on where the contrasts are with Cooper and see if he can, you know, see what issues and what mistakes that he's made resonate the most with your voters so that you can pound that message, drive that home, and characterize him for the voters. And then, you know, at the same time, making sure you don't, you know, kind of have any, you know, fumbles on your own. Because, look, I mean, you get a you know, candidate that trips up or something, it can be, you know, hugely impactful across the ballot and obviously for the candidate. So you want to make sure you're ready to hit that ground running and really win the race. And that's why you got to do research both on yourself and on your opponent.
You know, you've talked about, digging in on some of these invisible people in the agencies and some of the grassroots, some of the university board seats and that sort of thing. But, you know, we still at the national level on the Democrat side, you know, we're still stuck with this same roster of toxic people who won't go away. You know, Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, AOC, and on we go down the list. Are some of those people just entrenched and they're never going to go away? Or how do you see that in the future?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think we're stuck with them. You know, I don't see a future anytime soon where, you know, New York or, you know, San Francisco start electing, you know, good conservative wingers. So, you know, we're probably stuck with these guys. At the end of the day, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world to have a Chuck Schumer or a Hakeem Jeffries or, you know, Nancy Pelosi, because I think they really, you know, they consistently say the quiet part out loud. And that's incredibly important. That, you know, they make it very easy to show the American people what the left wing of the Democrat Party is really about and how they're taking their party to the left. So, you know, while I'd love to have some, you know, rock star conservative as the senator from New York, I'll take an AOC or a Chuck Schumer in the Senate as a kind of an exemplar of left-wing craziness that we can tell the American people about if they, you know, vote for a Democrat in their Senate race.
Well, they certainly have shown us who they are by allowing the TSA employees to be unpaid for weeks and weeks and weeks, and
yeah,
and unfunding the, you know, components of the DHS. I mean, if that doesn't tell you who they are, nothing will, I guess.
Exactly. And you know, this has been an embarrassment. You know, the pullback that they're pushing for on ICE enforcement is horrible. I mean, it's going to have devastating impact on our cities. So yeah, I mean, unfortunately, we know what we're getting with these guys. And the question is, you know, will voters in November say, hey, I want another scoop of Chuck Schumer, or are they going to say, hey, I've been really impressed with what the president's doing, and I think he needs a team in the House and Senate to continue fighting for the strong America First policies that he was elected for. I'm cautiously optimistic that you know, that the American people are going to exercise good sense in November and continue the kind of America First agenda that President Trump's been pushing. But look, I don't have a crystal ball. I'll be I'll be up late first Tuesday in November, you know, like the rest of the country.
Yeah, and there's so many moving parts right now with the military engagement in Iran and that, the effect of that on the economy, and can the economy bounce back in time for November, and all of those things that are at the moment as we speak are very difficult to forecast, I would guess.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, exactly. You know, obviously the Iran war was disruptive and you know, really created issues in the economy. Whether that persists for, you know, for months, I don't think it will. I think that'll be in the rearview mirror by you know, kind of when the race is settled down in October. So, you know, I'm optimistic that we're going to get to that good spot. And, you know, the kind of the issues that have been a little bit of a drag on kind of day-to-day pocketbook issues will have resolved themselves, and people can really see the positive agenda coming out of the White House.
Well, Tom, we certainly thank you for your time today. We look forward to seeing you next week on April 16th, when you will be addressing the Moore County Republican Men's Club here in Moore County. Go to the Moore County Republican Men's Club website to learn how you can sign up for the luncheon, which will be at noon. Tom, how can folks follow you on social media? Where can they go?
Yeah, I mean, the best place is our X/Twitter feed. We are the Swamp Monitor on Twitter. So that's the best place to just kind of keep track of what we're doing. That's where we put out all our good findings and our reports.
Well, Tom, thank you for joining us and for the work that the American Accountability Foundation is doing throughout the year. And we'll look forward to seeing you next week.
Outstanding. I'm looking forward to it. Appreciate the time.
Well, as always, we thank all of you for sharing Saturday mornings with us. For David Hensley, I'm Steve Woodward. We're back next Saturday exposing deception, corruption, and rhino imposters doing what we do best, taking aim.